Tonight we're going to be talking about an incredibly controversial topic, the question whether we're permitted to relinquish, halacha permits relinquishing Israeli land for peace. Welcome you all, yashar koach to everyone for joining, yashar koach to Torah in Motion team, to Rabbi Kelman, to all the technical support great individuals who are helping making this sheer a reality. It's so beautiful to see people gathering from so many different places to learn Torah together. And we're going to discuss this incredibly controversial issue from two basic perspectives. Hashkafa, from Jewish attitude, and then technical halacha. And so we remind everyone what we've been doing the past few weeks is that I'm going to present a section at a time, and after each section, I will respond to the comments that have been made. So you can put in your comments as it occurs to you, but I'm going to wait to respond until after I finished a particular section. Okay. First point regarding Hashkafic debate over this incredibly important issue. First, it's important to clarify values. It would seem that all parties would agree that the Eretz Yisrael has incredibly great value. And then the only question regarding relinquishing Israeli land for peace is whether concern for pikuach nefesh, saving Jewish lives, overrides the value of retaining, the halachic value, the hashkafic value of retaining Jewish control over all portions of Eretz Yisrael. I would like to share with you Gemara and Ksubos on Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, which describes the love that we should have for Eretz Yisrael. It's an incredible Gemara. The Gemara records as follows, that Rabbi Abba kissed the rose of Akko, and Rabbi Hanina repaired the rose of Eretz Yisrael. Rashi explains that because of his love of Eretz Yisrael, he made this effort, so that no one would cast aspersions on the quality of roads in Eretz Yisrael. Of Ami and Ravasi, when they gave shir in Eretz Yisrael, they moved the Talmid and the students during the summer from the sun to the shade, and during the winter from the shade to the sun. Rashi, so they would not complain about Eretz Yisrael's weather. Rabbi Chia, in a dramatic statement, Rabbi Chia Bar Ganda used to roll in the dirt of Eretz Yisrael. He's quoting the pasuk in Tehillim that says, "For your servants desire her stones and find charm in her dirt." Unbelievable. Even the stones and the dirt in Eretz Yisrael that the Amoraim loved, because even though these parts of Eretz Yisrael lack any economic worth, nevertheless for us it has immeasurable worth being part of Eretz Yisrael. And I'd like to share with you a speech that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, the Rosh Yeshiva and Yeshivat Har Etzion, delivered in 1977, delivered a speech on the occasion of the Camp David Accords that were reached with, that Medinat Yisrael reached with the state of Egypt. And there were many in the religious Zionist camp that were incredibly against these accords because it meant relinquishing the Sinai, including areas such as Hevel Yamit, where there was the Yamit area, where there were Jewish communities established. And Rav Lichtenstein said in that incredibly important speech that even though he believes that halacha can support or can tolerate that agreement made with Egypt in 1977, despite the fact that it meant giving up land in Eretz Yisrael, nevertheless, even though he's supportive, he still believes, and he believes that every Ben Torah, every true believing Jew, has to have an incredible love for Eretz Yisrael, and the idea of giving up a portion of Eretz Yisrael should be seen as painful. And giving up land in Eretz Yisrael, even if it would be permitted, would be somewhat analogous along the line of someone who needed a surgery to save their life, and they had to give up a limb. It would be that incredibly painful. Rav Lichtenstein mentioned that he identifies with a famous incident of Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, who was once the son of the famous Rav Cook and the Rosh Yeshiva of the Merkaz HaRav Yeshiva, which has been in the forefront in the news in the past few weeks. Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, on the day that Medinat Yisrael was established in 1948, cried, even though he was so passionately, such a passionate religious Zionist. Nevertheless, he cried because there was a lack of Jewish sovereignty over all of Eretz Yisrael. He said, where's the Jewish control of Hebron, of Shechem? He felt terrible. This kind of love for Eretz Yisrael, Rav Lichtenstein believes, that every Jew should feel, even if one believes that one is permitted to exchange holy Eretz Yisrael land in exchange for peace, in exchange for saving Jewish lives. Okay. So ends the introduction. Are there any comments, thoughts that you wanted to share? Okay. Fine. Let's now move on to the Hashkafic opposition to any concession. And this one, we're going to now quote from Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlamps. Vehement opposition to agreeing to the Peel Partition Plan of 1937. It's a little bit of a background of what we're speaking about here. First of all, Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlamps was a student of Rav Kook. He was Rav Kook's successor as the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Merkaz HaRav, the flagship yeshiva of religious Zionism. And Rav Charlamps was asked to comment on the Peel Partition Plan of 1937. This was a suggestion made by the British government how to divide Eretz Yisrael into a section controlled by Jews and a section controlled by Arabs. And that involved Jews receiving a very small portion of Eretz Yisrael, and the Jews actually did accept this plan back in 1937. Jewish leadership accepted this plan, but the Arabs, of course, rejected it back in 1937. But Rav Charlamps was, when asked to voice his opinion about this plan, said, "We must reject it." And listen to what he says: unbelievable, unbelievable statements. He writes, "There is no doubt that if it should come to, God forbid, being forced to sign an international agreement which would include concessions on our rights to Eretz Yisrael," and it's blowing your mind what he writes, "it is better for the signers to cut their thumbs off." Unbelievable. I'll read it again. "It's better for the signers to cut their thumbs off than to cut away any portion of beautiful Eretz Yisrael, beautiful Sion, upon which Hashem's beauty appears. Just as one who claims that the entire Torah is divine origin, save for one letter, is deemed an apikoros, a heretic. Similarly, one says that all of Eretz Yisrael belongs to the Jews, except for one inch, detracts from the holiness of the land." Wow. What a statement from Rav Charlamps. I should note that many other rabbanim were asked their opinion regarding the Peel Partition Plan of 1937, and there were two very prominent rabbanim, Rav Chaim Moshe Grudzinski, the author of the Shas and Shuvos Achiezer, and the chief rav of Yerushalayim, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, the author of the classic Shas and Shuvos Har Tzvi, both believe that the Jewish leadership in Eretz Yisrael should accept the Peel Partition Plan. Did not take the approach of Rav Charlamps. Okay, Adkan with Rav Charlamps. Four other sources that are commonly cited by those who vehemently oppose relinquishing land, Israeli land for peace. They often quote an incredible Gemara in Brachos Heyam and Aleph that says that lists a number of things that can be acquired only with Yisurim or with ordeals, and one of them is Eretz Yisrael. And this is unfortunately seems to be a reality. Eretz Yisrael, by definition, requires there to be, we have to go through certain things. It requires commitment. It requires us to, it requires sacrifice. And therefore, it means we have to retain land, our control over Eretz Yisrael, even if it will cost lives, believe it or not. Eretz Yisrael is acquired only with Yisurim. Another source, the Rashbam, an incredible Rashbam, to the Akedas Yitzchak. He writes, the Rashbam does, in Perachah Beis, Pasuk Aleph, to Sefer Bereishis, he writes, what was the cause of the Akedas Yitzchak? What triggered Hashem to give Avraham this, make Avraham go through this terrible ordeal, such a painful ordeal? Says the Rashbam, he says, look at the Smichus Parashios. Look at the section that appears immediately before Akedas Yitzchak. It speaks about the peace treaty that Avraham made with Avimelech. Says the Rashbam something incredible. He says that the Akedat Yitzchak was an onesh to Avraham Avinu, an onesh for having made a peace treaty with Avimelech. Wow, unbelievable. So we see how terrible it is, according to the Rashbam, for us to relinquish over a part, relinquish any part of Eretz Yisrael, even for a peace treaty, and it can have terrible repercussions. Now, this tremendous love for Eretz Yisrael that's especially espoused by the Rosh Yeshiva, Talmidim, Rebbeim, at Yeshiva Merkaz Harav, is fueled by the belief in Merkaz Harav, and started, of course, by Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, that Eretz Yisrael today, the Jewish resettlement of Eretz Yisrael, is a Techilat HaGeulah, represents the beginning of the Geulah, of our final redemption. And they are fond of quoting the Gemara on Sanhedrin, Sarichet, Saman Aleph. And the Gemara in Sarichet, Saman Aleph says as follows, quotes Rabbi Abba saying, there's no greater indication of the Geulah has arrived than what's described in Navi Yecheskel, Perek Lamed Vav, which we'll be reading in the Haftarah for Parshas Parah a week from Shabbos. Pasuk says, hear ye mountains of Israel, your branches shall bear fruit for my nation, Eretz Yisrael. If you'll pay attention to the Haftarah a week from Shabbos, you will hear the Navi Yecheskel describing what is the short-tail sign of Eretz Yisrael becoming, of the Geulah, of Eretz Yisrael being repopulated, is that the land gives forth fruit. If Eretz Yisrael is not barren, if it's fertile, if it's productive, that's a sign of Geulah, of redemption. And the opposite is true as well. But that when Eretz Yisrael is not producing fruit, it's a sign of Korban. So since the beginning of the Zionist movement, in the hands of loving Jewish hands, loving Jewish farmers, successfully cultivating Eretz Yisrael, as Eretz Yisrael produced fruit, saw Rav Kook the fulfillment of this Gemara Sanhedrin, the words of Rabbi Abba, it's Ein Lecha Ketz Megula Mizah, it's a sign of the Ketz, a sign of the Geula. Such was Rav Kook's view. And I must share with you, just to be fair, that Rav Kook is assuming one interpretation of this Gemara, that the fruits that Rabbi Abba is speaking about are natural fruits. And the Masha indeed presents this as one possible way of learning, understanding this Gemara. But the Masha, a classic Mefarish to the Gemara, presents another alternative. He says perhaps the kind of fruit that's spoken about in Sanhedrin, Sarichas, and Aleph is supernatural fruit, and that we have not yet seen fulfillment of. So Rav Kook's interpretation of Sarichas, and Aleph accords with one interpretation of the Marsha, and not both approaches. Finally, many in the religious Zionist camp of opposition to any concession, even to save lives, stems from an incredible statement that was made by Rav Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog, Rav Kook's successor as the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. The story goes as follows. The legendary story, well-known story, especially in Eretz Yisrael, that Rav Herzog came to the United States in 1943 in the midst of World War II. He came to America to raise funds, and he was about to return to Eretz Yisrael, and he was at Idlewild Airport, and Rabbanim were begging him, stay in America, begging him, please, how can you go back to Eretz Yisrael at a time like this? Because remember what's going on in 1943. 1943, the Nazis were at the 90 miles from Eretz Yisrael, at El Alamein, and the Nazis had not been defeated in any battle. And Jews were making plans for a last stand on Har HaKamel in case, Chas V'Shalom, Rachman al-Islam, that the Nazis would take over Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Herzog said to the rabbis of the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, no need for a plan for a last stand on Har HaKamel. No need for him to stay in America in 1943. Because he makes the following point. that there is going, he said, that there is a Churban Bayis Rishon, a Churban Bayis Sheni, a destruction of the first and second temples, but never a Churban Bayis Shlishi. The third Beit HaMikdash will never be destroyed. And he interprets that this Geula that we've seen in the 20th century, that is irreversible. He believes that's it, and nothing will happen. The Nazis will not take over Eretz Yisrael. And so it happened in 1943. And people are fond of quoting this, that saying that in some circles, that Medinat Yisrael will never be destroyed because we're promised it may suffer, but we're promised that it's never going to be destroyed. Where do they get this from? This idea is not clear. Rav Kook didn't seem to present the source, did not present the sources. But we can suggest the following sources. First of all, from the Nevuah of Amos, which we'll be reading Mir Hashem for Parashas Kedoshim, after Pesach. Amos says as follows, I shall return my nation, the Jews of the land, and they will rebuild abandoned cities, and they shall settle them, and they shall plant vineyards and drink their wine, and they shall create gardens and eat their produce, and I shall plant them on their land, below ye not shu owed me out of the sun, and they will no longer be removed from their land that I have given them, says Hashem your God. Wow. In the future, will God Eretz Yisrael never be removed? Herzog believes 20th century, that's been fulfilled. Others like to point out an incredible Ramban. The Ramban writes that how many tochachos are there in the Torah? Two. Two tochachos in the Torah. In Parshas B'chukosai, in the end of Sefer Vayikra. One tochacha, the second tochacha in Parshas Kisavo. What do these tochachos represent? Says the Ramban, the tochacha in the end of Sefer Vayikra is foreshadowing, speaks about the Churban Bayis Rishon. The second tochacha in Parshas Kisavo speaks about, addresses Churban Bayit Sheni. But there's no third tochacha, which implies that there will be no Churban Bayit Shlishi. That's Rav Herzog, and it fuels the Hashkafic opposition to any concession regarding Eretz Yisrael. I'll take a break for a second to hear if there are any questions, comments, and I'll be happy to hear what you have to say. Okay. All quiet, fine. I just wanted to raise the following. And now, after this, you may want to say something. I'll hear what you have to say. I'd like to challenge a little bit what Rav Herzog said. I'm an incredible supporter and admirer of Rav Herzog, both in his Hashkafa and his halakhic writings. But I would like to raise the following question. I've always been a little bit bothered by Rav Herzog, because it's almost it reminds me a little bit too much, and I'm just respectfully posing this question, and you find in the Navi Yirmiyahu, in Perek Zayin, Yirmiyahu saying, if you don't do tshuva, you don't do better, there's going to be a korban. The Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed. And the people responded, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem. It's the Heichal Hashem. It's the Beit HaMikdash. How can the Beit HaMikdash ever be destroyed? And Yirmiyahu replied, this is in Yirmiyahu Perek Zayin, no. That we have the Beit HaMikdash only if we behave well. It is not unconditional. So I'm suggesting that, I'm wondering, perhaps, and I know this is an incredibly difficult and controversial thing that I'm about to say, but to raise a thought, but nevertheless, where do we have this guarantee that if we behave poorly, if we make bad decisions, if we don't act responsibly, maybe, God forbid, we could lose Medinat Yisrael, God forbid, but it would seem to me that there is only one guarantee the Torah gives us that's unconditional. The only unconditional guarantee is that Am Yisrael will live forever, that Netzach Yisrael, that the Jews will live, no matter what, all of Am Yisrael will not be wiped out. There will be part of Am Yisrael that will remain forever. Is the Medina guaranteed? Well, the Beit HaMikdash wasn't guaranteed, so perhaps the Medina is not guaranteed as well. I'm throwing that out. I know it's a heart-rending issue, but I want to tell you, I want to share with you, I once mentioned this, I once shared these thoughts with a major Rav in Eretz Yisrael named Rav Yoel Ben Nun, and he pointed it wasn't just Rav Herzog. He pointed out the Panovich Rav, the founder of the Panovich Yeshiva in Bnei Brak, had a similar attitude. You ever wonder how did they afford to build the Panovich Yeshiva in 1943? There wasn't popular support to start the yeshiva. You know what was? The Panovich Rav also believed there's not going to be a Korban by Shlishi. No Korban. The Nazis are not going to come and terrorize Israel. And he was able to buy the land for the Panovich Yeshiva for pennies. Because people thought that the land was worth pennies because the Nazis were going to be coming to Eretz Yisrael in a matter of days. So he was able to buy the land incredibly cheap, the Panovich Rav. So perhaps he also adopted the approach of Rav Herzog. Very interesting. Okay, now let's take a look at the other side of the coin. Hashkafic support for those Rabbanim who would tolerate exchanging land for peace. I'd like to quote from three Rabbanim, Rav Yehuda Amital, Rav Adi Yosef, and my Rebbe, and Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. Rav Amital is also my Rebbe. Rav Amital, also one of the Rosh Yeshiva Shivat HaRetzion, laid out the following thoughts. He believes that we have three tiers and three priorities amongst Jewish Hashkafa. Am Yisrael, Jewish people, Torah Yisrael, the Torah of the Jews, and Eretz Yisrael. And he believes that this is a hierarchy, that the needs of Am Yisrael, he quotes Tanit Veil Yo that seems to support this, the needs of Am Yisrael somehow come before Torah Yisrael. Perhaps that's why Pikuach Nefesh takes priority over almost all the Torah except for three specific Averot. And Eretz Yisrael, which comes after Torah Yisrael, because the holiness of Eretz Yisrael, as the Mishnah in Kalim indicates, stems from the Torah of Eretz Yisrael. What makes Eretz Yisrael holy, says the Mishnah in Kalim? The fact that we bring the Karban HaOmer, the Shtei Lechem, from produce that is grown in Eretz Yisrael. It's the Torah that makes Eretz Yisrael holy, and the Torah enjoys, therefore, priority over Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, argues Rav Yehuda Amital, that in case there's a conflict of the needs, Am Yisrael needs to relinquish part of Eretz Yisrael. So we have a conflict between our commitment to Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. Our commitment to Am Yisrael takes precedence over our commitment to Eretz Yisrael, and therefore a portion of Eretz Yisrael may be relinquished in order to save Jewish lives. So argues Rav Yehuda Amital. Interesting response from his Talmud and now successor, Rav Yaakov Maidan, at Yeshivat HaRetzion. He argued no. He argued that the needs of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael are one and the same. They're identical. And he believes that there never can be a situation where the needs of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael are in conflict. So you can never have such a scenario. If Eretz Yisrael needs to be, if there's a question of Eretz Yisrael being relinquished, that cannot be in the interest of Am Yisrael because the two are inextricably linked, and that would, by definition, be damaging Am Yisrael and cannot be tolerated. So argues Rav Yaakov Maidan, respectfully disagreeing with his Rebbe, Rav Yehuda Amital. Ad kan Rav Amital. Now let's move to Rav Avadi Yosef. Rav Avadi Yosef came out with a tshuva in Tchumen, Volume 10, arguing that the halacha tolerates sacrificing land for peace. And Rav Avadi Yosef quotes an amazing story from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. That's Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik of Boston's grandfather. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was once asked during World War I, say to him, well, maybe this is all worth it, all the suffering and loss of life of World War I, because perhaps World War I is the war of Gog and Magog that the Tanakh teaches is going to precede the arrival of the Mashiach, that we're going to be reading that Haftarah actually during Pesach. So perhaps this World War One is the Milcham of Gog and Magog and will usher the Mashiach, and therefore World War One maybe was all worth it, someone suggested to Rav Chaim Soloveitcher. And Rav Chaim Soloveitcher gave a stunning response. His response was that it's not worth it, that even if Pikuach Nefesh is even if World War One bring the Mashiach, it's not worth it, because he says as follows: if Pikuach Nefesh overrides over almost all the mitzvot in the Torah, so Pikuach Nefesh can override the arrival of the Mashiach himself. Better the Mashiach not arrive, and even one Jewish life should be saved. So argued Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, which is what an incredible statement from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. So quotes Rav Aji Yosef. And Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, Rav Chaim's grandson, formulated the issue as follows. He said he was asked to evaluate the Gush Emunim, the wonderful Jews who have established Jewish communities throughout the lands that Eretz Yisrael, that Medinat Yisrael took under control after the 1967 war. And Rav Soloveitchik said he admires the Mesirat Nefesh, the Mesiras Nefesh of the members of Gush Emunim, but he says he admires the Mesiras Nefesh, but he values Pikuach Nefesh even more. Protecting and preserving life is more important for Mesiras Nefesh for Eretz Yisrael. So argues Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. So I've come for the first section of the shiur regarding the Hashkafic debate regarding relinquishing Israeli land for peace. Anyone have discussed a lot of controversial issues and points of view? Any thoughts, comments? No? Okay. I want to also clarify that I'm not necessarily supporting personally either one of these, and even those Rabbanim who would theoretically support exchanging land for peace are not necessarily behind in supporting any initiatives that have been of exchanging land for peace have been initiated by specific Israeli prime ministers over the past number of years. We're speaking about in theory, or perhaps you want to say in practice, a practical debate would be over the peace accord that was signed with Egypt in 1977, whether that is in violation of halacha, or whether the Torah can tolerate that agreement. Okay, now let's move on to the halachic debates. We'll present two sides. First, we're going to present an argument made by one of the great Dayanim of the 20th century, Dayan Ehrenberg, from the Tel Aviv Beit Din, a legend in Eretz Yisrael, and I believe a Ger HaChassid. And Dayan Ehrenberg came out against relinquishing any land in Israel for peace. He makes the following argument. He points out to a Ramban, and he points out to Minchas Chinuch. He points out to the Ramban in his Perush, in his commentary to the Chumash, by Midbar Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Nun Gimel. That's a mitzvah of Arash Temes to Arash Yishabdimbot, says the Torah. Ramban says this is a mitzvah that applies for all generations. They were supposed to conquer the land and settle in the land. So says the Ramban. He says similar point in his critique of the Rambam, Sefer Mitzvos Aseh, positive command, number 4. There's a mitzvah to conquer Eretz Yisrael. Fine. So we have a mitzvah to settle in Eretz Yisrael, to live in Eretz Yisrael, and to establish Jewish control over Eretz Yisrael. Now the question is, does that require us to sacrifice our lives? Darren Ehrenberg says yes. He points to a very interesting Minchas Chinuch. Minchas Chinuch is a commentary to the classic work of the Rishon, the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch writes in his mitzvah regarding the mitzvah to kill one of the members of the seven nations that lived in Eretz Yisrael. And the Sefer HaChinuch writes that there is a mitzvah to kill one of the members of the seven Canaanite nations, only if one will not endanger himself. If you endanger, if you, if would be in danger, one is not obligated to fulfill the mitzvah to eliminate the members of the seven Canaanite nations, Chizi, Prizi, Yavusi, etc. And the Mincha Schino, the commentary Sefer Achinuch, asks a very strong question on the Sefer Achinuch. He says, I don't understand. What does it mean without endangering yourself? Why should there be an exception to the rule to eliminate the Shiva Amim if in case of danger? The Mincha Schinuch says as follows. If the Torah is obligating us to wage war against the seven Canaanite nations, the Shiva Amim, and by definition, the Torah is saying to wage war against them, war involves risking lives, and unfortunately, it means even loss of lives. And the Torah expects us to act in the Derech HaTeva, in the normal functioning of the world. So argues in Chaschinuch Leferi the following argument. He writes that the mitzvah to destroy the Shiva Amim should apply even in case of danger, because when the Torah obligates us to conquer and destroy the Shiva Amim, that means by very definition we have to risk our lives and we have to fulfill this mitzvah even at risk of lives. So says the Mincha Schinuch. Dayan Ehrenberg says the same thing applies to Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and Kibush Eretz Yisrael. If the Torah, by definition, requires us to seize control over Eretz Yisrael, then by definition, what is it saying? Since it means to wage war, take it by force. And that means, by definition, we have to risk lives. Argues Dayan Ehrenberg, the same idea of the Mincha Schinuch. If the Mincha Schinuch says that the Torah obligates us to risk our lives to fulfill the mitzvah of destroying the Shiva Amim, the Torah, by definition, obligates us to risk our lives in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Dayan Ehrenberg says, it gives one exception, though. He says, if military experts say that if we would wage war to retain the land or to conquer land, and that we would lose the land in any case, and that it's a no-hope situation, there's no way we'd be able to actually win that war, says Dayan Ehrenberg, so in that case, we can relinquish the land because we wouldn't be able to hold on to it anyway. But if militarily we're able to hold on to the land, even at a price of casualties, of loss of precious Jewish life, Rav Dayan Ehrenberg says, by definition, the Torah obligates us to risk our lives in order to retain control over Eretz Yisrael. So argues Dayan Ehrenberg. Let's get to in a moment. Okay, I'll wait to hear your comments, and then we'll go to a response from Dayan Ehrenberg's argument. Anybody? The Palestinians are not Shiva Amamim. Okay, that's an interesting point. All right, these Palestinians are not the Shiva Amamim, but to respond to Reb Simcha, Dayan Ehrenberg will say, but nevertheless, we have a mitzvah to conquer Eretz Yisrael and should be under Jewish control, even if it means from nations other than the Shiva Amamim. So by definition, he argues that we have to take control over the land, even at risk to Jewish lives. That's Dayan Ehrenberg's argument. Now, if you're saying the second thing, you said two points. I responded to the first part about the Shiva Amim. The second point is that the normal function of the Western world today is not to attempt to expand your borders by war. That's an important point. Ravad Yosef is going to raise that in the context of the Gemara Ksubos that we mentioned 2 weeks ago, that we are forbidden to take control of Eretz Yisrael by force. So that's an important thing that we will consider. Would that not give the Arabs justification to attack us? Our belief is that Hashem promised Eretz Yisrael to the children of Yitzchak and not to the children of Yishmael, then from a Torah point of view, Arabs are not justified in challenging our right to control Eretz Yisrael, then they would be interfering with a divine promise to the Jews, to the children of Yitzchak, to control Eretz Yisrael. In that case, it would not be justified. I assume you're talking about from a Torah perspective. Right. Okay. All right. Let's hear another side to this. David. Ooh, here we go. Okay, now that's a nice question. Okay, Diane Ehrenberg's position on the halachic status of Medinat Yisrael. Especially since you live in Beit Shemesh, I think it's important to clarify that that the state of Israel is not a secular government. I mean, a lot of it is. A lot of Medinat Yisrael is not run according to halacha, but part of Medinat Yisrael does function according to halacha. I remember doing my shimush, my training to be a Masada Gittin in Eretz Yisrael. I remember the first day I was in the basin, I saw a man with azikim in handcuffs in the basin. I asked, why is this man wearing handcuffs? They told me that he refused to give a get, and the police brought him in. So in Medinat Yisrael, if God forbid there's a need for chalitza, the Medinat Yisrael demands, therefore the law of Medinat Yisrael demands chalitza. One could be, there's a law in Medinat Yisrael that if you're serving in Sahal, you're not allowed to put milk into hot coffee, because all the kalim in Sahal in the Israeli army must remain tarav or fleishik. Right, I understand, but I think it's important, just, it's a good thing you're saying, it's only for Dine Ishut, but I think it's, there is no, you do not have separation of church and state in Eretz Yisrael, so Eretz Yisrael is not defined as a secular government. It's mostly secular, but certainly it's closed for the government. The offices are closed for Shabbos and Yom Tov. So now, in many ways, it's a Jewish state. I don't think the government would agree. Well, if you'd ask the Shas, they would tell you that it's. they tried to make Ehud Barak, remember, tried to make a Mapecha Chilonit, a secular revolution. And that did not exactly work out so well. So we should be completely, but at this point it's you can't really describe it as a secular government. Diane Ehrenberg, no one's saying it's a Torah government, but certain Torah law does govern portions of portions of other functioning of Eretz Yisrael. But I think let's just get back to your issue about what is Diane Ehrenberg's position on halachic status of the state of Israel. He views it positively. He views Medina. First of all, he was a dying within the system of the Rabbanut, of the chief rabbinate. And Diane Ehrenberg in his Shalos and Shuvah, Dvar Yeshua, believes that Medinat Yisrael is a vehicle for the Jewish people to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of not only Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, but Kibush Eretz Yisrael as well. And therefore he believes that the state of Israel would be forbidden to relinquish land in favor of peace. And this would supposedly, if religious parties would take his tshuva as authoritative, they would pull out of a government that would agree to sacrifice land for peace. Okay. Any other thoughts? Okay. Now let's take a look at a response to Diane Ehrenberg's argument. Well, first we'll quote from Rav Amital, and then we'll quote from Rav Avad Yosef. Rav Amital points out, yes, the Ramban, remember the two-tiered argument, the Ramban, the mitzvah to conquer Israel, Minchas Chinuch, that we have to risk our lives in order to fulfill a mitzvah involving war. And the Rav Amital points out, that's very nice, that the Ramban agrees that it's a mitzvah to conquer Eretz Yisrael at all times, even today. The Ramban seems to disagree. Does not list in the 613 mitzvot that there's a mitzvah to conquer Eretz Yisrael. In fact, the Pas HaShulchan, written by one as an authoritative sefer regarding the halachos governing Eretz Yisrael, the Pas HaShulchan is written by a Talmud, a student of the Vilna Gaon. The Pas HaShulchan writes that even the Ramban concedes that the mitzvah to conquer Eretz Yisrael does not apply in all generations. The Paz Shulchan argues that the Ramban agrees the mitzvah to settle in Eretz Yisrael, to live in Eretz Yisrael, but to conquer Eretz Yisrael does not apply in all generations. So one perhaps can argue that you can have the same Jews living in a smaller amount of Eretz Yisrael. They would still be fulfilling, those Jews would be fulfilling the mitzvah of residing in Eretz Yisrael, even though we would not fulfill the mitzvah of kibush Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Avadji Yosef, and this is relevant to the issue that Simcha pointed out, says that, reminds us that even though he believes in Medinat Yisrael, Rav Avadji Yosef did serve as a Sephardic chief rabbi in the 1970s of Medinat Yisrael. He writes that the Gemara in Ksubos and Kuf Yud Aleph requires that us, or forbids us, Shelo Yalu B'choma, who are not obligated to take, that we are forbidden to take Eretz Yisrael by force. And if you recall, we spoke 2 weeks ago, what was Allah's justification for Jews to live in, for the establishment of Medinat Yisrael? The answer was because we were given Medinat Yisrael by the Balfour Declaration, the League of Nations, and the United Nations. So if the United Nations, on the heels of the Six-Day War, passed UN Resolution 242, which requires Israel to exchange territory that it seized in the 1967 war in exchange for a peace agreement on the part of Arab nations, it would seem that halachically we would be required to abide by United Nations resolutions. Otherwise, we'd be in violation of the Gemara Ksubos of our oath not to take control of Eretz Yisrael by force. An interesting argument by Rav Avadji Yosef. And that would justify giving up the Sinai for a peace treaty with Egypt. It would seem that the Menachem Begin, what he did was in keeping with not only UN Resolution 242, but the Gemara and Ksubos Kuf Yud Aleph, when Menachem Begin signed that peace treaty with Egyptian President Anwar Sadat back in 1977. Now, one other prohibition that we have to be, that Diane Ehrenberg raised, is a prohibition of Lo Sichanein. Parshas Vayeschanan, the Torah tells us, regarding the seven nations, and here the poskim say that it applies to nations other than the Shiva Avamim, Lo Tichanein, which is interpreted in a number of ways. One of the ways that it's interpreted by the Gemara in Avodah Zarah is that Lo Titein Lahem Chanaya Bakarka. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah in your Testament base tells us Lo Titein Chanaya, it is prohibited to give or sell Israeli real estate to Nachrim, to non-Jews, and argues Diane Ehrenberg that we are obligated to honor this prohibition. We cannot violate this prohibition, even if it means that it will cost lives. And Rav Avadji Yosef believes that that's not necessarily so. When are we obligated to risk our lives? We must give up, sacrifice our lives in order not to violate Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shrikus Damim, murder, immorality, or idolatry. But other than those three cardinal sins, we are not obligated to sacrifice our lives. So it comes to a conflict of Lo Tichanein and saving Jewish lives. Saving Jewish lives takes precedence. So argues Rav Avadji Yosef. And finally, Rav Avadji Yosef adds that we have the opinion of the Bach, the Jewish Bach, the famous commentary to the Torah. Bach writes that the prohibition of Lo Tichanein applies only to a nation that worships Avodah Zarah, and a nation that are not of the Avodah Zarah, such as Muslims, would not have the law of Lo Tichanein applying to them. And so argues the Bach, and in fact, that's what Medinat Yisrael, or the Rabbanut in Israel, Chief Rabbi in Israel, relies on this to a great extent in justifying their Het Mechira in selling the farmland in Eretz Yisrael to a Muslim. Muslims are strict monotheists, and perhaps Lo Tichanein does not apply to them. So Rav Avadji Yosef adds that as an idea. Okay, right. So David adds an important point right? Except for war, if you accept the argument of the Minchas Chinuch. Very, very good point. Okay. All this is for the most part theoretical. Now we finally, when we're coming to the conclusion of the shiur, we're coming to really what seems to be the more practical issue, and that is, does the Torah sanction exchanging land for a questionable peace? And this is for because we don't know if this is the peace treaty is going to bring real peace. And even the peace treaty with Egypt, even though for the most part there has not been war with Egypt since 1977, but we hope we should never have war with Egypt. But who knows? And we'll see in retrospect whether Menachem Begin made the right decision to relinquish the Sinai back in 1977. Hopefully it'll remain to be a good decision. But let's see, what does Halacha say about exchanging land for a questionable peace? So it's Rav Soloveitchik said after the Six-Day War. He said that how do you determine whether we are permitted to exchange land for peace? He say draws an analogy to another area of Halacha. When it comes to the question of whether someone is permitted to eat on Yom Kippur, whether Pikuach Nefesh overrides Yom Kippur, what does the Mishnah in Yuma say? Machilin asol pirofe, that the Rav has to consult the doctor, competent medical advice regarding the question whether this person must eat on Yom Kippur. Rav Soloveitchik said the same thing applies to the state of Israel. Should Pikuach Nefesh override the Jewish control over Eretz Yisrael? Rav Soloveitchik said you have to ask the military experts. If the consensus of military experts say that we should give up the land, that it's in Israel's best interest, that it will save lives, Rav Soloveitchik said you follow the generals just like you'd follow the doctors. And it would seem that most of the generals, the consensus opinion amongst Israeli generals, certainly in 1977, was that it was worth relinquishing the Sinai to Egypt in exchange for the peace treaty signed at Camp David in 1977. But then the question is, what if you have a situation where the generals are disagreeing? One general would say, you must sacrifice land. It's in Israel's best interest. Other generals would say that it's terrible, that would gravely endanger the security of Israel by giving up land. Well, what do you do in such a situation like that? So here, Rav Herschel Schechter, Rav Soloveitchik's, one of Rav Soloveitchik's prime talmidim. Rav Schechter draws an analogy to another area of halacha. Let's say you have a dangerously ill patient, and that dangerously ill patient is given opportunity to undergo risky surgery. That surgery may kill him immediately, or it may give him long life. Who makes a decision? Normally, halacha requires a patient to undergo surgery. If it's necessary to save life, you have no choice, Hashem's body. However, when there's a question of whether we're allowed to undergo risky surgery, are we allowed to risk our lives in order to save a small amount of life for the possibility of having a long life, this kind of risky surgery? Such surgery is never imposed on the patient. Moshe Feinstein and other poskim say that such a decision is to be made by the patient. And Rav Herschel Schechter makes the following argument. He believes that in Eretz Yisrael, you have a dangerous situation. Should we exchange land for a questionable peace? That, Rav Schechter argues, that decision has to be made by the Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael. Interesting approach. And Rav Shalom Carmi, another student of Rav Soloveitchik, said that given the fact that there is no referendum in Eretz Yisrael over exchanging land for peace, then you have to view the elections as a referendum for exchanging land for peace. And if the majority of the Jews in Eretz Yisrael would vote for a party that is willing to, it states on its platform, that's willing to exchange land for peace, then it means that this is what the Jewish people in, who live in Eretz Yisrael, this is what they want, and this is the decision they make, that they will follow those generals that believe that relinquishing land would be in the interest of, would actually, if this is what the Jewish people want, they could exchange land for peace, they can undergo that risk in order to save, to possibly, in the long run, save more Jewish lives. Okay, that's Icon, Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Schechter, and Rav Karmi. All right, let's take a look at, let me try to respond to David's questions, and then we're going to conclude with the approach of a very interesting writer, Professor Eliav Shochetman, what his response is to Rav Schechter's approach. All right, David, you ask, does Rav Soloveitchik say that the determination of these matters is rendered to the experts, or the posig must consult with the experts, yet ultimately the posig must render the decision? That's a nice question. That's a very, very nice question. I guess we'd have to go to answer your question, David. It's an excellent question. We would have to look at the model of Yom Kippur, and there the posek cannot deviate from the opinion of the expert. He can only question that the opinion of the expert, and perhaps appeal the expert decision to a different expert. But I don't think he can simply dismiss the expert opinion if he's not a doctor, because the posek is not capable of making such decisions. Rav Soloveitchik felt that the decision as to whether the Israeli government should relinquish land for peace is one that the posek is not capable of making. It's only the security experts are capable of making that. Okay, that's the response to your first question. The second, how does one take into account the non-Jewish vote? That's a very good point. Rav Schechter writes in his big Fehatzon, in his Sefer of Shelot Tshuvot, the only way that we can sanction sacrificing, relinquishing land for peace is if that Jews, not and the non-Jewish vote would not be included. Would have to be the Jewish vote. That makes his position a little bit impractical to implement, because how would you take into account the non-Jewish vote? Because you have non-Jews who vote for Jewish parties. Without getting into controversy, we all know that there are 300,000 immigrants from the former Soviet Union to Medinat Israel who are halachically have Jewish blood, but halachically they're not Jews. That's a very important question that David has raised, raising into question the practicality of implementing Rav Schechter's approach. Okay, we're going to conclude with an argument made by Rav Eliav Shochetman. I'm going to respond to Simcha. Let me just finish Professor Shochetman's comment, and I'll respond. Professor Eliav Shochetman makes the following very interesting point. Can everybody hear me again? I'm sorry it took me so long to get back on. Can you hear me again? Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much for your patience. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much. Your big yeshkov to everyone for waiting. Wow. Thank you very much. Okay. I apologize for the problems I'm having with my computer, but thank you very, very much. Professor Shulchan says as follows. He says that how in the world can you apply this idea of when you have disagreement of doctors to the situation in Israel? He says that not all the Rabbanim paskin that way. He quotes a major halachic authority in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, who says that in an analogous medical situation, if you have some doctors say you better undergo the risky surgery, otherwise you're gonna die. And all the doctors say, don't undergo the surgery. So what should you do in such a case, says Rav Mordechai Eliyahu? Shev al taseh, do nothing. So Rav Shochetman makes the following argument. He believes that since you have some generals that say, give up portions of Eretz Yisrael, it will strengthen our control of Eretz Yisrael, and other security officials, leading security officials that say no, relinquishing part of Eretz Yisrael will make it worse, will worsen the security of Eretz Yisrael. In that case, the best, most prudent approach would be Shev al taseh adif. Don't do anything. Sometimes a good lesson in life. You're not sure what to do, whether to do something or not to do something. Shev al taseh. Better not to do that. So, very interesting approach to machlokes. Between Rosh Shacht and Rosh Shochetman, how to deal with exchanging land for a questionable peace, which is really the real issue that we're faced today in Eretz Yisrael. The bottom line is that we hope that the day will come that the words of Purim will be fulfilled, V'nafochu, Asher Yishlatu Hayudim Hema V'Soneihem, that we should be able to take control over our enemies, and just like Mordechai and Esther ushered in a great time for Am Yisrael, may the Mashiach come and usher in a permanent good time for Eretz Yisrael, at which time the questions such as we raised this evening, difficult questions, should remain something purely to the Beit Midrash and not have to be applied halach lamasa practically in real life. I'm happy to hear and to try to respond to some of your questions and comments. Yashka, thank you, David. Thank you very much. Thank you for joining, and thank you so much, everyone, for staying on.
Rabbi, can I ask a question?
Thank you. Sure.
All right. It's more common. You know, I wanted to wait to the end because I didn't want to dominate. This is your shiur and not mine, of course. But isn't there more questions other than just pikuach nefesh? There's diplomatic concerns. There's weapon concerns, where we get them, which is related to diplomatic concerns. Ultimately, it's the politicians which have to listen to the generals and make that decision, the politicians, whoever the Israelis elect. Also, there's the issue, basically, that the only way to really hold on to the Shtachim is to either kill off all the Palestinians or to oppress them for life. Those are the two realities. Now, I'm not suggesting that we should, you know, anyone who's ever read the Torah from the first Rashi and Bereishit, we know who Eretz Yisrael belongs to, and Yimot the Mashiach, whenever it will happen, you know, hopefully we'll all be able to walk in every inch of Eretz Yisrael. I mean, everyone who walks through Yerushalayim feels the Kedusha, at least I did when I was there. So, the issue isn't that. The issue is, you know, Zchosh Ger Ma'it Be'eretz Lo Shelachem. We have no other way of getting rid of the Palestinians other than killing them or chasing them out. And we're not going to, no one's going to let us, and even if they would let us, even if the UN would say, no, maspikim akev roshes, eh? And just ignore us. Can we as Jews really do that? Is that really what we want to do today? Is that really what the image of history that we want to conquer 2 million people? To oppress them? I mean, it may be partly hashkafa. I'm not denying that we have a mitzvah liyashev et kol haeretz. Kol Haaretz. That's not the issue. Whether it's practical, B'yameinu Anu, B'zman Hazeh, without Yemot HaMashiach, I highly question that. I'd like to hear your comments.
Okay, so I'll try first of all, the politicians, first of all, these politicians, the government, members of government in Israel include from religious parties that are governed, that will abide by halacha. So the halacha does very much have a voice and an impact. And the politicians, especially those, the ones that are following halacha, have to consider diplomatically, you know, we do have to consider this issue of pikuach nefesh, holding on to Eretz Yisrael versus pikuach nefesh. Now, a consideration is if Israel is being pressured by the State Department, the U.S. State Department, to give up portions of Eretz Yisrael, otherwise Israel will not receive sophisticated weaponry from the United States Defense Department. Well, that's an issue of pikuach nefesh, because Israel, in order to survive, requires the maintenance of a qualitative edge over the Arabs. They have to have better military equipment. So there's no doubt that's part of the equation of pikuach nefesh. Pikuach nefesh is not a simple matter. It's partially right. It's not just generals. But it's also politicians have to gauge, honest politicians that are looking out for the best of the Jewish people, what really is the best for Jewish people, what will save Jewish lives, and maintaining a good relationship with the United States is actually necessary in order to preserve Jewish life in Eretz Israel. There's no doubt about it. But I want to clarify something about the Palestinians. We are not oppressing the Palestinians. I mean, even if one would take the approach, let's say, of America's Arav, that we should control all of Eretz Israel, there's no doubt that we are. They're not advocating that we should oppress them. God forbid. How are we oppressing them? If Palestinians are suffering from roadblocks, security roadblocks, that's not our fault, it's their fault. So it's very much a mistake for us to take the approach that we are oppressing the Palestinians. No mainstream approach believes that we should expel them from Eretz Israel. You'll have people on the right wing that say you should offer the Palestinians in Eretz Israel Jordanian citizenship, because after all, Jordan really is a Palestinian state. It was established part of the British Mandate. So I'm not saying that I necessarily am endorsing this approach, but I am saying that it is a viable approach, and the Merkaz Arav approach does not require the oppressing of Palestinians.
But ultimately, okay. That's exactly. I mean, I'm not saying we wanted this. You know, we captured. I was in Eretz Israel during the Six-Day War. I was just right. As happy to dance on Shavuos in front of the Kotel and say Berachat HaGomel. It isn't, we got into this Baal Korchenu. But still,
right.
I mean, if you ask the Palestinians, they will tell you that they're being oppressed. And if you ask a lot of, Israelis, if you look, they will say that we're not doing it on purpose. But that's the, you know, the Kamash Malon, you know, that's the bottom line. You can't have roadblocks, even if we need the roadblocks, unless they don't want Jordanian citizenship. They're not going to go away, you know, on their own. So the only other way is to, I mean, are we going to let them vote in democratic elections in Israel? No, of course not. That would be the sofa in Medinat Yisrael. So what? I mean, there really is an issue about whether we could, from a practical perspective. For the Tovat Eretz Yisrael, with Tovat Medinat Yisrael, today, not talking about forever, without giving up our zchuyot, you know, over the land, but for practical,
right.
Normal reasons, is this the picture that we really want to leave? Can we, as Yehudim that have been so oppressed all our history, continue, because just saying we're not doing it is really not.
Yeah, we're not oppressing
it.
We are.
We may be doing it by Corfano because of the security needs, but we're still doing it. I have a nephew who just finished the army, and he's not Dati, he's not intellectual, he's not anything, but he was proud. He tells me how proudly how his Yechida and Tzahal used to look the other way while the Toshiv and Hebron used to abuse the Arabs. He was proud of it. I mean, it really is that way. You have right now a person who was a Bachur Dati who's just been talking out of a group called Breaking the Silence, that was just in Washington and on C-SPAN, and discussing how I don't understand how he was able to bomb Shkunot Ezrachim. You know, but he says, and then all of a sudden it comes easy after you do it a few times. So it really is that, I mean, I know we want to continue to believe that we're not doing it to them. But just look what happened.
Okay, the Palestinians have brought upon
without
themselves.
Justifying
the
what
Palestinians,
they did to us.
The Palestinian leadership, no, the Palestinian leadership has refused to share the land, and any suffering that the Palestinians are having is all their own fault. It's their doing. I'm not sanctioning. I don't think anyone in the mainstream of Torah thought would sanction abusing Palestinians. But nevertheless, the suffering is totally their own fault. And if you believe, as let's say Merkaz HaRav does, and I'm presenting the other side, that our Eretz Yisrael is promised by Hashem to the Jews, it's supposed to remain the Jews, and if the Arabs want to live there, fine, they can live there, but they have to agree to the Jewish control of the land. Otherwise, then they're not welcome. That's the approach of Merkaz HaRav. But that certainly they are, and also I'd add another thing. Well, what are we supposed to do? Just give up the land? I mean, how are we supposed to unilaterally withdraw? I think if you speak to the people in Ashkelon and Sderot, they'll tell you that the unilateral withdrawal from Gaza was one major disaster and a terrible decision. So on one hand, people argue that, oh, how can we rule over people who don't want to be ruled by us? On the other hand, how can we relinquish land to people that are determined to destroy us? It's a difficult issue and there's a debate, but I think that all Jews have to agree. And it's a matter of Jewish self-respect. And as I understand, we're constantly barraged by by media, by Arab media, and even by European media, and even some American media, that we're oppressing the Palestinians. We're not oppressing Palestinians. Bombing areas where terrorists are hiding among civilians are justified. That was our first halach shiur that we gave in the series. It's a moral thing. It's the right thing. It was done by it. I wouldn't be alive today if America didn't bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki. My father was a combat soldier, World War II, would have had to invade Japan. I think it's a matter of, that has to be Jewish self-respect. I'm not saying there should be extremism. I mean, we should stay far away from extremism, but I think there has to be a Jewish self-respect and stand up for what is right. And just like we're going to be reading in two nights, that in the world which everything was tov, in the first six prakim Megillah, everything's tov, 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 until Haman, until Esther finally in Perek Zion labels Haman as Ra. Haman hara hazeh. It's very important that in this conflict there's a right and a wrong. And Israel has taken, the Israeli government, the Israeli leadership has taken the right approach, the Palestinians have taken the wrong approach. Not to say that they're not innocent Palestinian civilians who suffer, and it's tragically, but nevertheless, the fault of suffering lies in the fault of their leadership from the time of the Mufti to Jerusalem, from Yasser Arafat to Hamas of today. Okay, any other comments? Any thoughts? Okay. All right, well, you know, there are different opinions, different sides of the coin. I hope we've done in this year we've done a fair justice to both sides. We're gonna talk about a little bit less controversial issue. Well, actually, not in terms of Arabs, but next we're going to talk about an issue, an internal Jewish issue, and that is benefiting from electricity on Shabbos produced by the Israeli power plants. You'll know that in Bnei Brak, certain portions of Eretz and other portions of Eretz Israel, religious Jews will not use the power, will have benefits from the power from the generators. They'll have their own generators, and we'll try to develop. We're going to review that issue and look at both sides of that very interesting and very important debate. Very fundamental halachic debate next week. Thank you for joining us. Yisr kach to everyone. Yisr kach to everyone from who joined us. Yisr kach to Rabbi Kalman. Yisr kach to all the good people at Torah in Motion for making this wonderful shiur, this wonderful participant, wonderful base medrash to make it work. A Purim Sameach, a Freilichim Torah. Have a good night, everybody.